You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Live from the table, the official podcast of the Comedy Cellar, coming to you on Sirius XM Radio 99, Ruddug. And of course, Noam is not here because that's why I'm doing the introduction, because Noam's not. I don't know why he's not here, but he's not.
I take it as a personal offense.
Is he on his way?
No, he's not on his way. Well, he's on his way, but not here. I think he's on his way to Mila's piano recital or something. I don't know. But he's not here.
He's going to choose his daughter's piano recital.
I don't know what
table?
He has, but he's not here. But who we do have here is a fairly impressive array of guests. We have
Keith Robinson.
Let's do this systematically, Peter. We have Periel Ashenbrand, our new producer.
Hi.
And NP.
Keith Robinson.
Absolutely.
A regular at the Comedy Cellar, writer, performer, and he also has a special called Back of the Bus Funny.
Back of the Bus Funny. Three Girls, One Keith.
That's a podcast with Amy Schumer.
That's on there.
But Keith,
how good was that third host, the third girl that ruined the name for you?
You're damn right.
Right?
Yes.
That person owes you a debt. It could have been a perfect name, but you had to have Rachel Feinstein on there.
You're damn right.
Is that who it is?
I don't like it. Three girls, one Keith.
It'd be two girls, one Keith.
That voice you hear is that of Mr. Pete Holmes, a special guest. I say special because he's not here very often. Keith is here a lot. We'd love to have him, but he's not.
Well, you don't have to explain everything like that. Just go. Why take me down and build him up?
Well, I'm not taking you down. I'm saying we're happy to have Pete because we never see him.
Peter. That's true. I haven't been here since probably the three of us were shooting here.
You've been living in Los Angeles.
Living in L.A., where I live. Yeah, we were talking about that.
Now, this is the first time I've seen you since the end of the cancellation of the...
The end of the cancellation means we weren't canceled.
Well, no, I'm just...
The ongoing cancellation. Our cancellation was renewed for another cancellation.
The point is crashing is...
Over. It's crashed.
The third season was the last season.
Final.
How did you feel about that when you heard the news, Pete Holmes?
It was a mixed bag. I mean, coming back here stirs up those emotions because I can't drive around this neighborhood. We passed Mineta's, and I was like, that's where Bill Burr and Artie and I ate the steaks. They were fake steaks, but we were eating steaks and did that scene. And we passed the Fat Black Pussycat. I go, oh, that's where Artie and I had our big fight. And then I come here to the cellar, and I go, that's where Madeline and I, we had our big breakup, and she stumbled into the street. And then I come in the club, and I'm like, oh, this is the table where I was talking with Natterman and Feinstein, and there's fucking Keith, and downstairs, obviously, upstairs. This is like our set. It's crazy. So this is like a reunion for me with locations and people. And that makes me miss it. I've said a couple times where the show is about making friends with change. And, you know, whether it be a divorce or a loss or a blown audition or a bad set. So a show being canceled is, in my real life, that's a change. And the message of the show is you roll with those changes. You go with the flow. So that's what I'm doing.
Keith and I both were a little bit rattled.
Yeah,
I don't want to speak.
I didn't like it.
Keith.
I'll speak for myself.
Okay.
I really didn't like it. The thing was canceled.
I know we never got the great Keith episode.
It was getting some juice. The thing was, I was getting a little juice off that third season.
Yeah, baby.
People just call me from Australia. Yeah. This place, that place. Like, I loved it. L.A.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. Wait till the fourth season.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was getting a little bit, you know, bigger roles with each season. First season, I had maybe one episode. Second season, two or three. Third season, four. I was looking forward to
a
fourth season. I thought that this would be
I don't want to rub it in, but you know Judd loves you, and I love you. And the same for you, Keith, obviously.
Keith does love me as well.
I mean, Keith and Trainwreck, come on. This is a Judd Apatow. He's in the stable.
I'm in.
And we always had episodes. We only got to do eight a season, which was really hard for us. and would always have episodes up on the board for different ideas. Would kick it around. What would it be like if Pete, we had it, I don't hope this doesn't make it worse, but we're like, what if Pete lived with Natterman? What is Natterman's life like, you know? What if Pete goes on a trip with Keith? What, like, we had this whole Black Circuit thing,
Chitlin'
thing, and it was like, Pete goes, and he has to, we had the episode broken, like, he's got to learn how to, like, be himself instead of pander. You know, like, white, a lot of white guys go to the Black Circuit, they're like, what's up, y'all? And it's like, no, be you. They want you to be you. Be yourself. Be your funny self.
It's funny because it's like, think about that Black Circuit. A lot of black comics pander to
of
the
course.
Black Circuit.
Yeah, to the white circuit.
To the Black Circuit.
Oh,
and
to the
black
white
circuit.
Okay.
You know, you go back and forth. When I first started, I did enough of the white circuit. And I go back to the neighborhood. My whole lingo had changed. So I go up to my buddies in the hood. They hood dudes, straight hood dudes. Yeah. I'm like, hey, how you guys doing? How you guys doing? What are you, Potsy? What the fuck is wrong with you? So, you know, you have to adjust.
It's like that great Bill Burr bit.
I performed once or twice, well, maybe three or four times in all black settings.
Yeah.
I must say, it's not my favorite thing to do.
I'm not just saying this. I think I can't imagine a crowd that wouldn't just immediately get you. You're one of the most gettable guys because you're just you.
You got to not have that fear of the crowd.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the main thing.
I think
you can't look when that crowd sniff out that you got some fear of them.
Yeah.
Then you're going to get
maybe it. I was overthinking it because I thought, all right, everything I said could potentially be perceived as racist.
Right.
See? You know, you're like, you say, so who here is married? Oh, black people can't be married?
Right,
you
right, know? Right, right. I understand. Well, you get in your head.
You get in your head.
I think that's what Pete would have done. Pete on the show.
Yes.
And he would have tried to been like pandering. So Bill really kind of cut his teeth in the black circuit. And he said to me once, he was like.
Bill Burr.
He was like, you got to remember, like when you have a comedy show, 10 comics, and there's one black guy or one black woman. That's special, that's like unique, and it's like, oh, good, here's like a different perspective. He was like, it's the same thing when you're the only white guy on a show. Oh, here's something new. And you got to go with that energy instead of like, oh, I'm so sorry, well, I'm different.
I'd prefer to avoid it if possible.
The thing, that you can avoid black crowds. You know, you can go do what you do and never have to do a black crowd. I can't avoid white crowds. I got to do a white crowd because that's what it is for me.
Right.
Your reality is you don't have to do no... Like Burr used a black crowd like Fox used with the black shows of the 90s, Martin and all. Remember all the black shows that built Fox up? That's how
Rock.
Burr did.
Yeah.
Well, but I feel that a white crowd is more receptive to a black comedian than a black crowd in general would be to a white comedian.
Yeah, that's where you're wrong at.
Well, I certainly...
Funny is funny. But it's your mindset. When you got that,
there is
that
a confidence.
Mindset... And
confidence in Def Jam, even the way comics are dressing up, and obviously I think of Bernie Mac, the great Bernie Mac, with the I Ain't Scared of You Motherfuckers, is like the essence of every comedian. Somewhere in there needs to be a Bernie Mac that's like, I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
Because that's what the thing is.
That's right.
I was actually there when Bernie did that.
You were?
Yes, I was there.
Dude, that should be your credit.
And he's, I ain't scared.
The sex guy was there.
I was there. Of course I was
there. That's
big. And we all did Def Jam that. You know, I did Def Jam and everybody did Def Jam. But it is like, if you have that confidence and you... The audience is picking up like, oh, he ain't trying to be nobody but himself.
Right. That's right.
And that's where you win.
Yeah.
And that's why I like that black clubs, black crowds will price check you. Like, woo, rah, 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 no good. You know what I mean?
What do you think a black crowd, correct me if I'm wrong, not that you're the authority, but I feel like you are one of the authorities.
Relatively authoritative.
You're the most authoritative at the table. Seinfeld, black room, good.
Seinfeld will be good because Seinfeld will be
He's
Seinfeld.
Him. He's going to be him.
He's
Larry
gonna
David.
Be himself. Larry David.
Look at the black community.
Himself.
Loves Larry David because he's being legit.
He's being real.
Being
legit. Yeah. So when you know.
I do think white people are missing out. I spent about 2 days with Lunel, following her around and interviewing her. And I went to a show in Brooklyn and there were about, easily 2,000 people in the crowd. And I was literally the only white person there.
Wow.
And it was shocking. I mean, this was
just
like
different.
It was what? Why is that happening? It was insane.
Well, I think it goes both ways too, because a lot of the comics that are on an all black circuit, they come to a white room and they fall apart because they have that same fear.
Right.
They're not authentic.
Well, that's
that white crowd.
That's the Bill Burr bit where he's like, I feel like I have to act a certain way in black neighborhoods, but you know it goes the other way. You know this bit where he's like, where a black guy is going to pick up his girlfriend in the white neighborhood. You know, he starts low in the seat, but as he gets closer and closer to his house, he's raising the seat up a little bit. It's really funny. I can't do it like Bill. No.
But that's
but like
what
we
it
all
is.
Morph out of fear.
Out of fear of whatever you know.
But so the greats don't.
When you find yourself,
that's right.
That's the thing of finding yourself on stage. You're like, I don't give a damn who it is. So if you like me, you'd like me. If you don't, you don't.
And that's what Keith would have told Pete in season four. But here it is, the radio play version.
Now, in Crashing, as people that have seen the show know, you use a lot of comedians, a lot of people from the Comedy Cellar world. How do you think it would have worked had you hired actors to play us
better? I'm just kidding.
He may be right. Hold on.
No, I don't think better. You know, Joe Rogan was just saying, why wasn't there a show with all comedians, right? And I thought about that. I was like, one is availability. It's really hard. Like, if we wanted to book a comedian in every little part, you can't get Bo Burnham to come in to New York City for one day for $350. It's just not going to happen. So that's difficult. You can get maybe local people, smaller people. The trick is...
You're saying you can't get a Dan Abnett and a Keith Robinson.
That's what I'm saying.
For $350.
No, you guys, I hope your rate was better. If it was $350, let me talk to your agents. That was a bad deal. But the idea that all comedians is good, but like... I think about Madeline. You guys worked with Madeline. Tall blonde. Kill Bill.
Madeline Wise.
She was so good. I believe maybe Maria Bamford could have done that. You know what I mean? Played that in her own way. But you can't get Maria Bamford. You got to get these actors. And I sort of like the energy when it's actors working with comedians. It's nice to have that diversity.
She was great, Madeline. She was amazing.
She was my example of like, oh, fuck. I was working with so many comedians that we were sort of, I don't want to say teaching to act, but like working with new actors. Here's an example who would not mind me saying so. Esty has not acted.
Esty, just to be clear, she's the person that books the room here, and she played herself in
Crashing. And she was wonderful, and I love that experience. And then it's a different experience when you're doing a very dramatic scene, and somebody has to cry, and somebody has to pretend to be drunk, somebody has to do 9 takes, and it's 2 in the morning. That's when it's like, oh, wow.
That's when the actors come in.
That's right. But I was watching that going like, I'm not doing this. Whatever she's doing, that's what I'm trying to do.
Right.
They're like real legit things.
But one
so
thing
a blend is good.
Comedians are good for is by nature, a Judd Apatow joint uses a lot of improv. I don't know if he does that with everything he does, but certainly, but I assume he does.
No, when Madeline was funny, when her character was funny, it worked because she was funny. And I think she was very funny, but she was funny in a way that our people aren't. We're kind of funny in a more fucked up
way.
It's a little bit more honed, a little bit more fucked up, really.
I love seeing good acting because I know I'm nowhere near that. So when I see a good act, I'm like, oh,
and it makes you better.
Yes,
it makes you better.
Because I did something in '94 with Don Cheadle.
Yeah,
a movie called Rebound, and just watching this guy, I'm like, ugh.
That's not what we do. It checks you. You go like. That's why I'm always hesitant. People are like, oh, he's a comedian and actor. I'm like, I'm a comedian who acts. Yeah. I like acting. We all like acting. It's fun. But you really can feel the comedy on there.
Yeah, you can feel the comedy on it. Like, you feel, like, you can tell who's a comic. Or maybe because I know.
I think that depends on the role. A lot of roles, we do a fine job.
Oh, I'm not saying we're bad. It's just different. Like, Burr is a great actor. Bill Burr on Breaking Bad. I wasn't like, here's a comic.
We're bad compared to real. When you see a real actor.
We're catching up.
It's believe me, if I like Denzel's walk, is better than anything I've ever done.
Interesting.
Guess his walk.
Interesting actors are interesting people. That's what David Mamet said. He said, you would watch Al Pacino eat a sandwich. Yeah. You'd just be mesmerized.
That's
but here's what actors can't do, and I stand by this. They have a very hard time doing stand-up, looking like their stand-ups. Just mic technique, just the way they take the stage, just the way they look at the audience. You're going to have to do like a real in-depth method, Dustin Hoffman, Lenny-style character study if you're going to do it properly. And so when I see shows when actors are pretending to be stand-ups, you know, like Punchline. We always use Punchline as the example where Tom Hanks and Sally Field are pretending to be stand-ups. You're like, these are actors.
Yes.
Like, the way they pause, the way they do it. They don't add anything. They don't know to riff.
Yeah.
The
line didn't work.
Add something that works. Find it.
As I was saying about comics, about improvising, which is what a lot of Crashing was. It wasn't script. I mean, they would give you a script.
Had to run downstairs and you were like, where's the script? I was like, there's no script.
Yeah, well, you give me a script, it would say, you know, the comics get together and you'd have lines for us, but you say, but yeah, forget about the script. And sometimes Judd, can I reveal this trade secret? He would stand in the back of the room and yell out lines.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd say, Dan, try saying, you know, shut up, idiot. Or,
right. Or sometimes I would do it in the scene. Right. I'd go like, now call me fat.
And then we'd just try a bunch of different things and it would be cut up and stitched together and you wouldn't know it.
That's best, because, though. I mean, comics can do that.
Yes.
Because we're not precious about the craft.
Right.
We're not like, don't interrupt my process. We're like, yeah, I can say that.
Rachel Brosnahan talked about that when they asked her, were you real on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel? Like, were you really doing stand-up? And she was like, oh my God, no. Like, I would never really do stand-up. That was all written for me.
I'd like to point out, I haven't seen much of that show. So I'm not, like, shots fired to Marvelous
people,
Miss Maisel, which I always considered our sister's show. It just did so much better.
Well, people seem to like it. I haven't seen that either.
I thought it was phenomenal. I was really upset.
I wanted an alliance with Miss Maisel.
Well,
I wanted a time machine crossover episode.
Yeah, because remember, like, Lonnie Anderson would go on The Love Boat, and then she would go on Fantasy Island afterward.
Yeah.
And that could have been...
She could have found a time machine.
What have you.
Oh, yeah. Nice time machine.
She's given a drink ticket that teleported.
I'm not
to the
worried
side.
For you, Pete. I'm worried for Dan Natterman because I had health insurance as a result of crashing. It's the only time I've been in the Screen Actors Guild for 17 years, never got health insurance.
Oh.
But with crashing.
Yeah, you went and got that
health,
physical.
I got health insurance. Well, I know, but I have a physical coming up.
Oh.
So hopefully all will check out.
Well, I mean, not to be sentimental, but I think Judd and I agreed that like the best thing about it was finding a way to like represent the community, because we really are a species. I'm not trying to be sappy. We're a species. The show is about how comedians help each other. Sometimes people call bullshit on that. They're like, comics don't help each other. I was like, well, get new friends. If your friends aren't helping you, get new friends.
You're perfect. Like, comics is like, you know, some comics in trouble financially.
Yes.
Put something up right away. It's taken
well,
care
I'll
of.
Tell you this
you
about
see
comics.
It as
great
soon
community.
As somebody is
very,
sick
yes.
or dying or,
yeah, but
or
you gotta
dead.
You got to be sick of dying.
Yeah. Well, that's
merely a shitty apartment's not enough.
Yeah.
Nah, what would it be?
Well, all right. I'm just saying. Or like no health insurance is not enough. But if you're dying, comics are right there, Johnny on the spot, and money will be raised.
That's pretty true. That's fair.
That's not so much dying. I mean,
trouble. If you were in trouble, I feel like people would at least do a benefit show. We did an episode about that.
If I were in trouble?
I mean, if you were going to be evicted, how hard would it be to do the Village Underground? Dan's going to be evicted. Do it at 6 o'clock. Who fucking cares? We fill it out.
But how many people admit to being evicted?
Yeah.
Like I got evicted from my place in like 1990.
You did?
Big sticker on a door. And you know one of those stickers that you
can't come
spray
off. You can't come
no
off.
Matter what
the
somebody
shame
knew,
sticker.
I was being evicted.
They do those on your window of your car if you park in a street cleaner.
Well, you could put a poster over it.
That's true. Very Shawshank.
The poster of Raquel Welch. Now, Pete, but I say I'm not worried about you because I know you got shit cooking.
Well, that's very kind.
First of all, you rolled in today with a publicist and your manager. Now, this is a power move. You're trying to intimidate me, and it worked.
Pete is rolling in dough.
Clearly,
let's just say this. He's rolling in dough.
I know Dave Rad. That's your manager. He's here today. He would have dropped you like a hot potato if nothing was going on.
He'd love to. He would love to kick me
so
to the
So I know you got shit cooking. So the question is what's cooking?
You know, I don't say that this sounds like a line, but the book that I just wrote, Comedy Sex God, is what would have happened in the fourth and fifth seasons of Crashing. People are like, well, what happened next in the character? I'm like, well, it would have been about my talk show, which I cover in the book. It would have been about meeting my wife, which I cover in the book. It would have been about getting married, having a baby, all these things. So if you're curious, literally the next phase of my life is picked up in the narrative of the book.
Okay, so you won't get Keith Robinson and Dan Natterman in there.
Yeah, you don't have the cameos. But even if I had written you guys in, you wouldn't have been paid.
So. Was I a cameo? Because some people said to me...
Oh, you're no cameo. You were a series regular.
Somebody in my building said to me, hey, I enjoyed your cameo on Crashing.
I think that's just layman speak.
I almost said to him, get the fuck out of here. I was
you know
a cameo.
Who did a cameo?
I'm an actor.
Jeff Ross did a cameo.
But I didn't
want
to sound like sour grapes.
Season one, Jeff Ross did a cameo. When you just walk by and go like, leave him alone, Greer. I think he's straight. That's a cameo.
Right.
Like he wasn't even in the script. Later, Jeff Ross came back. But you guys were not cameos. You were series regulars.
Yes. But I didn't want to hit the guy because he lives in my building and it would have been awkward every time I
hit him. He might be listening now.
I just said thank you in a harsh tone.
That's right. Well, that's the right
place. Didn't know.
Yeah, these people don't know.
Well, so
my
so
dad calls Judd Apatow Jeff Applepaw. You know what I mean? Like, we can't expect these people to understand what we do.
Well, I do try to take that into account. Now, so your book is called Comedy.
How big of a deal is that, Jeff Applepaw? I'm like, I don't know, Dad. He's like Carl Yastrzemski. I don't know what to say.
What else beside the book? Anything or just right now the book? The book is enough, by the way. I'm not trying to minimize
it. No, I understand. It's a loving thing to want to know what people are up to. I'm trying to take some downtime. Crashing was 4 years for me. The pilot and then 3 seasons was 4 years, and it was nonstop, as you remember. I mean, how many nights did we have?
Oh, you worked like a dog, yeah.
Here, there were 14-hour days.
Now, you're what you had to do, I think, that work thing of trying to do, when you're acting and all that, because it's like, all right, now this.
Oh, dude.
Now that angle.
Well, you
now
saw this.
It was exhausting.
When we were in a scene, I was acting with you, and I was thinking, are we getting the plot point? Are we tracking the attitude?
That thing is hard.
It was a lot.
It was very exhausting. And one day I had diarrhea. That was season 2.
We don't need to know that.
Thank you.
You know the one where I'm at the box?
Yeah, you had
diarrhea? Well, what you didn't know is between scenes, I was downstairs.
Yeah, emptying your box.
I damn near broke my ankle.
Oh, and that was like the bad luck episode. Somebody had like that Tiki from the Brady Bunch on.
Yeah, I didn't like that day. Somebody said, did you trip or something?
Made a step.
Right, Keith got injured and had to be cut out of the whole thing.
Didn't like it. Yeah, no, it was a lot. So I'm trying to, this sounds, you know, a little woo-woo, but I'm trying to balance all that doing with some non-doing. I'm going back to what I was doing.
Doing is what I was doing on season 2 with the box episode. That was a
pooing.
Play on
you
words.
You were pooing. For 15 years, I was a comedian before Crash. I lived the lifestyle that you guys are enjoying. You do spots, you write, you're trying to put together an hour. I'm doing that again. I'm doing a little bit of writing. I'm actually writing a couple episodes of The Simpsons, which is a dream.
Wow, that's
true.
A big deal.
Yeah, I'm really excited
about that. They're on season 53.
They're on season 53. They like to, it's still on is what people, I see Megan Amram posted. She's like, yes, it's still on. My episode airs tonight. I've actually been watching the new seasons and they're great. So I'm writing a couple episodes of that. And I'm trying to develop a couple things, you know.
Judd Apatow was here about a month ago, and he said, "Yeah, I'm in town. You know, me and Pete are writing a movie." And I thought he meant you, but he meant Pete Davidson.
How dare he go to the other white Pete?
Another Pete.
How dare
he? You know what? The other Pete's not that white.
He's
as far not. As I'm
he's
concerned.
Pete. You're a whiter Pete.
Oh no, he's definitely not as. I just meant color.
Yeah, Pete. We don't even know what to describe Pete. Pete as.
What is it?
He maybe got some.
I suspect he has, and I don't know if he's done 23andMe, but I suspect he has some African American. I would imagine
he's Italian.
So
he's like an Italian kid from Staten Island.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. You go to ethnocelebs.com, which is the final authority on the ethnicity of celebrities.
I'll head right over there.
And it says that he's like Jewish and Italian and Irish, but. I believe
you're saying he's got some swagger, is what you're saying.
He's got a tinge of hip hop in him.
I saw him do his set at Largo. He's wearing a hood the whole time. I was like, that is something this Pete would never do. This Pete is trying to let you see that golden.
So anyway, did you and Judd don't plan to collaborate on anything?
I love Judd to death. I'm not just saying this. We're friends. He texted me this morning. He saw my Colbert last night and. And we miss each other. It's romantic.
You know what's funny?
I miss seeing Judd all the time. I gave him a mouse pad with a photo of me and him sitting in this club. So I was like, don't forget me. It was like romantic. I was like, bye, 4 years. I talked to the guy every day for four
but
years.
Wouldn't a better podcast thing be that you and Judd are feuding? Wouldn't
yeah,
be
I know.
Great?
I can't stand that guy.
Oh, that would be good.
We get some nice spicy.
I know. That would be clickbait. Pete Holmes dishes on Apatow. We didn't have one.
That's the title of this episode.
We didn't have one disagreement the whole time. I mean, every once in a while, we'd have like a courteous disagreement. But he was always right. And I'm not just saying that. He was always right. If he was like, it should be this, not this. But when you're working with fucking Babe Ruth, speaking of Pete Davidson, who kind of looks like Babe Ruth. Speaking of Babe Ruth, you can trust him. You're like, okay, you're the slugger. I'm just on the bench. And it really was his show. You guys know that.
Yeah.
People are like, I love your show. I was like, yeah, you love our show. I was involved. I wrote the episodes. But every scene was something that Judd was like, or he'd change it. Would be shooting a scene out front, and I was like, I wrote this like romantic scene between Pete and Allie, and Judd was there, and he was like, I think you guys should fight. You guys should fight. And I was like, what? And we'd do it, and he was right. It was
not a terrible Apatow impression. It's actually it's reasonable.
I did.
Nobody does Apatow impressions.
I was thinking that maybe we could do a movie, but I'm doing something with Pete Davidson right there.
That's
pretty good, Judd.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Now,
Judd, if you hear this,
I am
going to
switch gears a little bit on this show, as you may not know. We're a transgenre, we call ourselves.
Oh, wow.
That means we talk about comedy. We also talk about political stuff. Now, Noam gets very, very deep into the political stuff. I don't.
Okay, but he's not here, and we're still
not
doing it.
Right, and then when he's not here, you complain
but
we're not doing the political stuff.
There is a topic that I think is worth discussing. I think it's quite interesting. Then I think everybody has an opinion on
it. I want to talk about, what is it, Alabama?
Alabama and abortion more generally, and in more particularly, Alyssa Milano's call for a sex strike. Now, you're aware that Alyssa Milano, the actress from Who's the Boss and other things, Commando, etc., has said that women should not have sex until women get their reproductive rights.
That's not a bad idea.
Well, she's got to coordinate with prostitutes.
Well,
because that's where it's all coming from.
Well, Uber, took a few days off.
Well, my feeling, what does Uber have to do with it?
I don't know. I'm just saying things that we do driving that are for pay, you can still take a strike. I mean, you're going to have to coordinate with some men with large purple hats. It's a little pimps and hoes humor.
Yes. And
yes.
Noted. Now,
noted. Thank you for a Dan Natterman laugh.
But
noted.
But what about this? What about this? And women, first of all, many women are against abortion. So even if all the women that were wanted to strike, that's only probably half the women out there.
But you still
the other half of the women are not going to strike because they think abortion
is that number accurate?
Well, whatever it is.
Well, I think it's relevant, whatever that number is.
It's a high number. A lot of women are pro-life.
No. You can still be against abortion, but for women's choice.
Thank you, Keith.
That you can still be.
But what I'm saying
is, you mean you can be personally pro-life?
Yeah,
you can be pro-life for yourself.
Yeah, I don't know that.
That's asking.
But there's a lot of women. There's a lot of women. And there are women, of course, in that category. A lot of women that are pro-life, and they think that the law should be no abortion. And the men that are passing these laws, my guess is their sexual partners. The women that would strike.
I know what you're saying.
The women that would strike, their sexual partners are pro-choice
it's
anyway.
It's not like these Congress people that are voting pro-life.
Pro-life.
Are married to these women that are like.
Pro-choice women.
It's like 85% of these people in Alabama are like straight white fucking men.
It was 25 who voted was 25 white men.
Yeah, but.
Old, dusty, white men.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Old and dusty they might be. However, the electorate in Alabama is divided. The women are just as pro-life as the men, according to the polls that I've looked at.
Give me
at.
Some.
I don't know about that.
That you looked. Show me some evidence.
Well, I
don't think it's that far-fetched what you're saying is that, like, we live in New York, I live in L.A., people that live in metropolises, blue states, blue cities at least, these are going to be a lot of pro-life people, pro-choice people. A lot of the country is pro-life. I don't know the numbers, but there are a lot of
pro-life women. And just as many women are pro-life as men.
So what you're saying, it's a very simple point he's saying.
Yes.
Even if it's only 500,000 pro-life women, which is low, the strike won't work because they're not going to do it.
They're not going to do it, and the men that are
is what you're saying,
and the legislator that are.
It's not going to work anyway.
Isn't her point though? I would wager. No, this is a reasonable person. She doesn't necessarily think it's going to happen.
Yes.
What she's doing is what's happening. Here we are talking about women's reproductive rights. because somebody said something kind of salacious and interesting, they got people talking about it again, in hopefully in a positive way.
The whole thing is fucking garbage, frankly.
I mean, they're
talking about giving doctors 99 years in jail for performing abortions. They're talking about criminalizing women for going out of state for having an abortion. I mean, it's psychotic.
They're going back in time.
None of this
like
is...
It's insane.
Stop it.
None of this is valid under Roe v. Wade, but I guess the Supreme Court might overturn Roe v. Wade.
Because, what's the name?
Trump?
No, yeah, Trump basically, but what's it, Kavanaugh.
Well, we'll see what the Supreme Court does. I think it's a little early to start panicking.
They need five votes, and I don't think they have them.
Yes, they got five. It's five, 5-4, really.
Well,
five conservatives and five.
Well, but we don't know that just because they're conservative judges that they're going to vote to overturn Roe. Now, Pete, you come from a religious milieu. But you're no longer religious. You've turned your back on God.
How dare you? I think you should read my book. I'm a spiritual person. If you're wondering if I'm pro-choice, yes, of course I'm pro-choice. I believe in people's right to do with their body. Like, who has that? Oh, unfortunately, it's Louis. I understand that that's a hot button issue as well.
Well,
but he has that thing where
it's,
like, you can shoot somebody
that,
that's in your
house. I'll get to it, goddammit.
But
he has the bit about you can shoot somebody that's in your house. Imagine if somebody was in your body. It's a shocking way to sort of make an interesting point. But yeah, of course, I believe in a woman's right to choose.
But do you believe in it in absolute terms? Like, say, we're at the eighth month, and that. And the baby is fully formed. Would you believe in it then?
I don't see any benefit in commenting on
this. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. We
always wander down this dark alley when we talk about women's rights.
Let's go with that's what I don't like. Is let's go with what actually is happening with this law.
6 weeks
in Alabama. It's a 6 week law, but the little guys in Alabama, all the white guys in Alabama, it's like And even if you're raped, if through rape,
that's right.
They say, well, you still got, because every life is precious, you still got to keep the baby.
And they give the rapist parental rights, by the way, historically.
Really? Well,
there was just a case. Somebody raped this was a couple of years ago, to be fair, but somebody raped a 12-year-old girl. And then 9 years later, he petitioned for paternal rights and got it. So that's fun.
Right. So,
this is some.
But it's 6 weeks. You don't even know if you're pregnant. Usually,
I would just say this: because we are a comedy podcast, we do politics. We always try to relate it, if we can, to the world of comedy. This would be a positive thing for the Comedy Cellar because, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, New York will always have abortions. People come here for abortions. They say, "Why not take in a comedy show while we're here?"
Wow. You are a dark SOB.
Right after they hit Planned Parenthood, you think they're going to pop over here?
It could only help. I mean, they're here in town anyway, and I mean, worst case scenario is they don't take in a show.
And but they can't because they're gonna go to jail. Is the point?
No, not if they come here where it's perfectly legal.
So most of the people who, by the way, are not going to have access are women who do not have financial means.
Well, they wouldn't have come to the show anyway.
They can't afford the cover charge.
Yeah, but
I'm trying to put a positive spin.
It's not a positive spin. It's just horseshit. I really think this is horseshit.
I love you, Keith. More and more every day.
Sitting here, I was like, I'm just going to wait for this whole topic to pass. Like a barge.
Everybody should be annoyed that this whole thing is coming back.
Well, we are annoyed. We're annoyed, Keith. I'm trying to keep it light, but I would say that
something like that.
Well, you may be right, but we'll see what the Supreme Court has to say about it. Remember, this country's always had a very strong pro-life constituency that hasn't changed. They're trying to challenge Roe, and I think Roe will be upheld.
That's set law.
Set can be overturned.
But they're sneaking, find a way. They're tiptoeing around it. That's all they're doing.
It's fucked up.
I actually didn't know all of those details, unfortunately. So
once again,
we probably made half of them up.
No, what you said sounded informed. And it's terrifying. And I literally made all of that up. But I'm like, oh, it's heartbreaking. It's so sad, and I'm so sorry.
If it's horrible. You knew abortion were legal, Keith. I mean, were illegal. How would that change your sex life, if at all?
Not one bit. I'm going full throttle.
Okay.
Can I say that?
Yeah. Are you saying
you can say that?
You're wearing a bag, is what you're saying.
Absolutely not.
No bag. Well, we are on Raw Dog Radio. So I guess your comment is appropriate.
There's your jokes right there.
Yeah, there's your jokes.
You wanted some jokes.
This guy's reading abortion laws.
Well, we are trans. We're trans genre.
That's right. We're trans genre.
But I'm going to bring it back to comedy.
Good.
By the way, Dave Rath, if you want to start, hop on the mic. He does not want to hop on the mic. Dave Rath is at a loss for words, which is
rare indeed.
Now, here's something in the comedy world, and I think this is interesting. Our friend, our dear friend Ahmed Ahmed, you know Ahmed Ahmed.
I know.
I don't think that's his real name. But it might Ahmed Ahmed.
I don't think those are his real names.
Either one. Anyway,
here are the jokes.
He was in Naples, Florida, at a comedy club, and apparently was talking about on stage. He said something like, "Hey, who here is from the Middle East?" And a few people raised their hand. And he said, "Oh, we could start our own terrorist organization." And then after the show, a couple of audience members called the police. They felt uncomfortable. They thought maybe he's legitimately recruiting. I don't know what they thought. They called the cops.
Because that's how you do it.
The cops came.
Exactly.
Bin Laden started at the Chuckle Hut. I don't know if you know that. He was an improv team.
You know, if a Middle Eastern comic didn't talk about terrorism, I would be a little suspicious.
It is interesting, though.
Because that would be a little disquieting.
Why?
Because every Middle Eastern comic says something about terrorism. Pretty much. That's kind of right. I mean, true or false?
False.
You're saying that's false.
Aziz, Kumail. False.
Aziz is not Middle Eastern.
You're right.
Aziz is East Indian.
Yeah, Far Eastern so doesn't count.
Do audiences have the subtlety to know that? I've been with Kumail at shows where they yell terrorist. I have.
And if the comics don't mention it, the audience members certainly do.
I was with Kumail in 2001 when we started. That's how tense it was. I don't know if audiences are subtle enough. People like that are going to go, he's Far Eastern. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to know that.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
The point is terrorism humor is a mainstay of Middle Eastern comedians. If it's not, it's a mainstay. It's common.
It's common.
Yeah.
It's the elephant in the room that you make jokes about.
Well, it's like
not anymore.
it's a guy who's extremely overweight.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, at some point in his act, we'll address the fact that he's extremely overweight.
It's fluffy, is what you're saying.
It has to be addressed because everybody's thinking it.
Well, back in the 80s, like, you know, most of the black comics would, you know, come off with a, hey,
only
careful,
chip in the cookie.
Because I'm out, I'll rob your car, whatever, some horseshit like that.
Right.
And now it's like so far advanced over it. So maybe with the Middle Eastern comics, yeah, there,
because
we
now
get
a black comedian is expected. It's not unusual. It's not weird. There's nothing bizarre about it. But there was a time that you felt that same urge.
Yeah. I remember seeing Todd Lynn, rest in peace, right here at the Cellar. And he felt the need to go, like, why are you looking at me? Like, why is the bouncer on stage? That is a remnant of that same instinct to address, why is there a big black man on stage?
Right.
So Dante Nero had a very similar sort of thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of gay comedians, if they're gay in a way that's obvious, shall we say, we're going to talk about that. But at
a certain point, it doesn't become as necessary. Right.
Well, it might not.
Maybe not necessary, but as
maybe in Naples, Florida, we're speaking. I mean, it's more indicative of the audience members than.
Is that a big gay area?
No. I mean that it's
not
unusual to have a Muslim or.
Oh, that's where the story was. Yes.
Look, even here in New York, if your name is Ahmed or Mustafa or Muhammad, generally speaking, you're going to say something about it.
Who is buying a ticket to Ahmed Ahmed and can't handle that joke?
Well, that's another good point. I mean, maybe they didn't realize that Ahmed Ahmed was a, I don't know.
It's an amazing
pretty
name.
Yeah. Pretty obvious.
If
that
you
it's
didn't get it the first time, you got it the second time. Ahmed? Ahmed. Oh, Ahmed, 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 Ahmed.
Well, the good news is that the police, they came, they asked him a few questions. I don't know why they even bothered coming, but they showed
the
up. Well, I don't know what they asked.
What did they ask?
Yeah, that's what
they
I
probably said, "Are you planning a terrorist act?" He said, "No,"
and they said, "Oh, okay," because most
don't know.
Terrorists who are planning a terrorist act would admit it.
I don't know what they asked. I'm just. I don't think it's going to be online.
It's pretty fucked up. I'm sure it didn't feel great for a Metaman.
Hey, but then they say, if you see something, say something.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well,
so the audience see.
Yeah. Did they say that in Florida, though? I thought they said,
that's not what
go
they
to Disney World.
Stand your ground. That's a Florida law.
Well, Ahmed, the good news is any publicity is good, they say. And,
well,
comedian's
Middle Eastern reference at Naples Comedy Club prompts 911 call.
Yes.
They called 911.
It's like the guys in Starbucks all over again.
He was on stage?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's not what I read. It doesn't matter. The point is they call the police.
Well, I mean, it matters a little bit.
The point is they call the police. That's the
calling the police is different than dialing 911.
Yeah, it's an emergency.
This guy just made a really bad joke. I'm calling 911.
I sometimes call the police just to chat. You don't need an emergency. You can just be like, what's going on, guys?
I was thinking.
A lot of people probably don't know how to call the police other than 911.
You know what
even if it's not an emergency.
I've never called the cops on a white guy, and that annoys me.
You should start.
I haven't. From the history of white guys, I should call the cops all the time. A white guy comes through, but I've never did it.
That's really funny. That sounds like a bit. Like, how do you call 911 on a white collar crime? Like, they're laundering money or embezzlement. I don't know what it is.
But I never have. I call.
We can make that happen.
Puerto Ricans, blacks, a white guy.
This is a really fucked up story.
It is fucked up. Thank you.
Yeah, Danny,
you're the
king. More talk.
You were just the
king.
Well,
what else?
Ariel, being the voice of king.
What else would you like to discuss with regard to that story?
My point is, terrorists don't do meet and greets. We don't say death to America, but hey, can we take a selfie first?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It speaks, unfortunately, to the.
It's a pretty handsome guy.
Versus them paranoia that we have in this country.
Wait a minute. She's lusting after Alabama.
I didn't know what he looked like. He's pretty good looking.
Yeah, he is good looking. That is, come on. That's a guy that opens a mutual fund for you. That's not a terrorist. Not that a terrorist looks like anything. This is a tricky podcast, man. I didn't know I was coming into a hotbed.
It's a hotbed.
Well, as I've said,
what if Ahmed turned out to be a terrorist?
I know.
Probably not a very good one.
This is the plot of Homeland, by the way, that a terrorist doesn't... This is what we're learning as a country, that a terrorist is a person who does terror. They don't look like anything. My friend Azhar Usman, if we looked at a photo, I'm correcting myself, looks like, if we were watching a 90s movie, like a terrorist. Big, big old beard. He's a big dude, intimidating dude. I love him to death. One of the sweetest people in the world. But who's committing terrorists? Fucking white dudes.
Well, that's what I was going to say. With all due respect, I love you and I think you're wonderful. But most terrorists, you're the one in this country who looks like a terrorist.
That's the point I'm trying to make, and
I thank
you very
much. I know, I'm agreeing with you.
Yes, that's it.
It's
me.
But nobody does that in this country, right? We don't call white men terrorists. But most of the terror...
If I went on stage and was like, we should start a terror group, nobody's going to call. Nobody's even going to laugh.
You're right. It's true.
I just called 911 on Pete.
You got your wish. You got your wish.
Well, we do call them terrorists. If I think everybody agrees and nobody disputes that the bombers from Oklahoma City, what was his name, Timothy McVeigh, was a terrorist.
Yeah,
but if a guy's clearly just a lunatic with no political agenda, then by definition he's not a terrorist.
Yeah, but if your target is, a black church or a mosque, then it's an act of terror. That is the political agenda. If a white guy shoots up, a Walmart, and it's white people, then we can go. Unfortunately, that's fucked up as well. But it has less of a political motive. But when racist people shoot up other races, then it's definitely a different thing.
Yeah, well,
the motivation is.
We never call white men who do those acts of terror terrorists. They're mentally ill, or they have some other fucking bullshit.
Whatever we call them, it's not like we're taking it easy on them. They go to jail, they get executed.
No,
you
are taking the
word terrorism is taken on a certain connotation.
It
doesn't mean that white people that shoot up schools are treated kindly.
They're treated much better.
Well, Timothy McVeigh was executed.
Well, he's made the exception to the rule. And that other guy was just sentenced to death.
That what's his name? One of the church shooters, I think, was just sentenced to death. I forgot what his name was.
If you don't have that stigma on you of being a terrorist, it helps.
Well, I don't know that.
I want to see Pete stop more often at airports.
Man, well, the size of my body alone.
Well, I don't. Are you stopped? I know you're not stopped for terrorism. Are you stopped frequently as HBO's Pete Holmes?
Now we're into regular podcast questions again. Thank God. How often are you?
You don't want to ask me about stem cell research.
Well, I don't know. Gay marriage? Is there anything else?
We actually had Michael J. Fox on not that long ago. Talk to him about stem cell research.
If Noam were here, we would probably go into. Rashida Tlaib, however you pronounce it, in Israel. But he's not here, so we're not going to do that.
We'll save it for him.
We'll save it for another
time. You know where I'm famous is this neighborhood, because it's the set of Crashing. So if you saw, obviously Jerry Seinfeld's super, super famous, but if he wasn't that famous, but he stood in front of the restaurant in the Upper West Side from the show, that's like me walking around this neighborhood.
That's sweet.
This is where I'm famous.
Well, I get recognized in
above
this neighborhood.
Above 14th Street, I don't get recognized.
I get recognized after a show when they say, hey, weren't you just on the show?
Yeah, and by the way, even then,
sometimes they think I'm Lenny Marcus.
No, I walk around with a videotape of me on Crashing. Playing and just
on an iPad.
They said, "What's that?"
Oh, that's how I get recognized.
I want to hear about the fake steak.
I was eating a mushroom. I don't eat meat, so I was eating a portobello.
Oh, you're a vegetarian.
I'm a vegetarian.
Are you really?
Yeah. I'm a vegan.
I'm a flexible vegan.
What does that mean?
I love that.
Is that like a vicarious?
I am vicarious, and I don't eat meat or dairy, but I'm very lax about it.
Which means you do eat meat and dairy.
No, I'm pretty strict on meat, but I don't beat myself up. And I wish more people would be open to that lifestyle because veganism is looked at this club where it's like you're in, and then if you eat a cookie, you're out.
No, no, I'm like you.
And if more people, if you were vegan one meal a day, I'm vegan three meals a day most days, and then occasionally maybe I'll have a cookie. It's usually a sweet that I'll cheat.
But you don't eat meat.
Or I'll eat sushi occasionally. That's a cheat. So I don't want to be put in any box. But what I'm saying is most of the time I eat plants. That's very good for my body. That's very good for the planet. That's very good for the global.
It's good for the animal.
It's good for the animal as well. There's the ethic benefit.
So what's your main motivation for being vegetarian, vegan, flexitarian, whatever you want to call
it? I get high from it. I think most people are sick. They're eating mass farm nonsense.
That's right.
It makes them feel sick.
The meat industry is horrific in this country.
Well, pink ooze. Google it. Pigs smarter than dogs, and you're eating this fucking nasty nitrate antibiotic cancerous bullshit. It's fucked up to the animal. It's fucked up to you. So what people don't know, and I wish people did know, all day I've been drinking because I'm doing press all fucking day. Smoothies, green juice. That's all I'm eating. Maybe some lentil soup or something. That's all I'm eating. Keeps me high. It gets you high. If you want life. Eat some living things. I talked to Colin Quinn. I laughed right in his face. I was like, you had a heart attack. What are you doing differently? He's like, I'm taking Lipitor. I was like, eat some kale. Colin! But you should be Kalen Quinn.
Wait, well, how long have you been veganing?
It's only been maybe 6 years, five,
now,
six
but
years.
In your previous life, when you were eating meat, you didn't find a delicious steak or a cheeseburger to be a euphoric experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. But look at the animal. Look at what you are. You're eating something that's so dense in calories, your brain sends a signal. Same with a milkshake that says, this is good, this will keep us alive. But this is a caveman mentality. You found something that's dense in calories that says, eat this. We don't know when something like this is going to come around again. Now we're eating it three fucking meals a day. This is why there's an obesity epidemic. That's why there's a sugar addiction epidemic. It's why our kids are fucking dying. Everybody's pre-diabetic. Everybody's pre-stroke. Everybody's pre-cancer. It's fucked up. I don't care what gets you a good feeling.
But you said it gets you high to be a vegan.
I'm not talking about while I'm eating it. I'm talking about all fucking day. How do you feel high because you feel proud that you're a vegan?
No, because he feels...
Well, I let him answer the question.
How does this dummy host a podcast? I'm saying not while I'm eating it. All day, clean, burning energy, entering my cells and fueling me. The cheeseburger might taste good, but how's that bowel movement like 4 hours later that you're pushing for 9 hours, you diarrhea box-having person? I don't think you're an idiot, by the way.
I take offense.
I kind of like that.
I'm at the table. I like being mean.
I think it was Kraft Services that was responsible for my diarrhea. So the blame is squarely on the shoulders of HBO.
My show is not vegan. It's very hard to be ethical in your food, because technically you shouldn't eat at a restaurant. If you're like into ethics of animals, which I am, you shouldn't eat at a restaurant that's served, because if you buy a salad at a steakhouse, you're still giving money, more money than the salad costs, that goes to the murder of animals. So it's very, very hard. That's why I'm trying to invite people into a more flexible, not so black and white, not so binary, like, let's just start with what we can eat. One thing a day.
I got one thing.
One day a week.
But now,
Pete,
now Keith is a carnivore.
I am a carnivore, but I got one thing with you. You had absolutely nothing on abortion.
And now I'm all about vegan. I know.
About the animals, man?
He said he was pro-choice. He said he was squarely pro-choice.
If Noam were here, and he's not here, but if he were here, he would say, you're very concerned about animals, that's noble, but what about fetuses?
I love life. I wish pro-life had a different thing. Like, I wish it was called, like, pro-marshalling women's bodies, you know what I mean? Because it's bad marketing, or it's good marketing for them. I am pro-life. I think it's a beautiful thing, life. I just had a baby. It's one of the most beautiful things you can do. Do I think that people should be conscious if they get an abortion? Like, think about it and consider it and consider their options? There's a line as long as the Mississippi that will adopt your baby. And listen to all the stories about people that say they will give their baby up for adoption, and then they bond with the baby, and then they keep the baby, and then they love the baby. There's all these good stories for that. But do I think it should be mandated by the state? Absolutely. Or by the country? Absolutely not. But yes, I'm into life. I love life.
This.
There you go.
I love animal lives. Talking, I love baby lives.
You're talking
lives.
Like
I love old lives. I think old people in nursing homes deserve dignity and respect. I think our elders deserve dignity and respect. I believe our babies deserve dignity and respect. I believe animals and plants deserve dignity and respect. But do I think it should be marshaled on a state
now,
level?
Now, are you really this positive, or are you on medication?
I'm on green juice, baby. I still feel bad for calling you an idiot. Every time we did a scene and I roasted you, I'd call you a wooden puppet or wet lips or whatever it was, I'd feel bad as I was saying it. And here I am again.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because you were saying it was fictitious. It was a TV show.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have called me a wooden puppet if you didn't feel I had some physical qualities that resembled on some level a woman wooden puppet.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, you know, it's like when a fat guy gets called for an audition and all the lines are, I'm a fat guy. Well, yes, it's fiction, but you're a fat guy, and that's why you were called in for this audition. So,
well, you mostly just said you sounded like an AM radio left on an old person.
Well, that's not an insult. I take that as a compliment. Whether you meant it as such, I don't know. But I've devoted much of my life to cultivating the AM radio voice. Being a wooden puppet is not something that I have cultivated nor desire.
Yeah.
Did he convert you
to veganism?
Yeah, to somewhat
board with vegetarianism, maybe not veganism. I think it's great for the environment, as you said, great for the animal, great for everything. I can't do it.
You could do
it. I think you could do
it.
That's a cop out.
Of course you could do it.
That's a cop out.
I love meat and I became a vegetarian.
The meat and dairy industry creates more pollution than planes, trains, and cars combined.
You see, I need that.
And when people are like, oh, in L.A., there's a drought. I passed a billboard that says, you know, there's this campaign, like, don't throw away your food, eat your food. They were like, throwing away one egg wastes 52 gallons of water. Eat your eggs. I was like, shouldn't that sign say, don't make eggs? 52 gallons of water? And I don't even have the stats. But when you get to a pound of beef, the amount of water that shit costs, it's fucking crazy.
I am paying more attention. I do try. I am cutting down on my red meat, both for health and environmental reasons. But to go completely veg
or
vegan.
But that's what I'm saying. Try it slowly, Dan. I'm saying this with love. Try it slowly.
I believe that to be vegetarian, you have to be essentially a happy person.
That's hilarious. Let's work on that.
Because if I'm happy, I don't need meat. I got other things in my life. You have is that cheeseburger.
Can I tell you something, Dan?
You're going to eat that cheeseburger.
You're going to love that. I think you're going to love this, because this is empathy for you. Because remember, I ate meat for 36 years or more. It was less. But so don't think that I'm like demonizing you. In fact, I have a bit. Keith, my carnivore brother. When I'm in New York, this bit kills. I go, I'm a vegan. People boo. I go, I know. In New York is the only place where it does not make sense to not eat meat, because it's so hard to live here. that when you get to the restaurant after being on the J train and taking this crosstown and a cab splashes a puddle and a homeless guy throws up fire on your neck, you're like, I made it. Fuck you, chicken. Give me that chicken. It is so hard to be vegan here. I completely empathize. You go to L.A., it's sunny, everybody's wearing linen, we have tans, and there's a juice place everywhere. It's easy to be vegan. So I empathize to everybody listening. It's not easy. All I'm saying is give it a try. Maybe one meal a day.
Well,
I do one meal a what?
There you go.
Meal a day.
I think that'd be all right.
Do you do meatless Monday?
Yeah, no, I do. Sometimes I don't eat meat at all.
See, that breaks my heart. I don't like the guilt in it. I'm like, no, I want Keith to be happy.
But I just think it's also about the industry in this country. Like, they're feeding us poison. Yeah. You can get sustainable. You can even eat meat.
Isn't everything bullshit after a while?
Even I don't know.
Whole vegan thing, isn't that bullshit?
Well, dude, if you want to talk about water.
That seeps into whatever you're doing.
Almonds take a lot of fucking water to make. Almond milk isn't great for the environment. That's right. Why oat milk is better. So, yes, that's a beautiful point. Everything is sort of fucked down to it. I have a joke, too, where I'm like, a tomato would rather live. It's not conscious. It can't talk. It doesn't make noise. But it is life. It wants to be. All life feeds on death. This is what all the great myths are helping us cope with. And we don't have good myths anymore, so we're suffering as a people. Sugar is fucked, too.
Sugar is the worst.
Anybody listening, please watch the movie Fed Up. It's unbelievable. It'll change your life. And they make this point. They were like, if another country was doing what we're doing to our own children, we'd go to war. There'd be World War III. To be the death, the disease, people getting gastrointestinal surgery at 14 that can kill you and often doesn't even work just to keep big fucking medicine going. These people do not give a fuck about you, and this is what's important. The meat industry doesn't give a fuck about you. Alcohol industry doesn't give a fuck about you.
Well,
tobacco
no business
give
gives
a fuck
about
you.
I know, and that's Carnival important. Cruises don't give a fuck about you.
Dude, but it's important if you're following a dream. So your dream is like, I want to eat a good cheeseburger and feel that bliss. At least make sure that you are the author of that dream. Don't buy someone else's narrative of what happiness is. Find your own and be conscious about it. That's what I'm saying. So, like, I stopped drinking, for example. It made me a lot happier and a lot healthier.
You don't drink at all.
I stopped drinking. It's been about a year and a half.
This despite the fact they say that a glass of red wine a day is actually helpful.
Huh? Bullshit.
Come on. Yeah,
well, you say...
Why do they say that? Antioxidants, right?
Well, I don't know why they say
that. Why don't they say grape juice? You don't think there's antioxidants in grape juice? These studies are funded by the alcohol industry. You know what I'm saying? They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about
this
you.
This wine has saved my life.
Well, Pete...
Well, maybe it does have a blood-thinning quality, but there are other things that can thin your blood.
Just as you weren't prepared to... I must say, just as you weren't prepared to talk about abortion, I'm not prepared necessarily to talk about...
I like that I found
the
your
food
area.
Industry. I would have studied up on it.
Well, watch Fed Up and talk about it on your podcast.
But have you had the Impossible Burger?
Love it.
That's what I said. It's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, this has pissed me off.
Here comes Keith.
You two phonies.
Who's a phony?
Here it is. So,
Keith and Perry Allen.
I like
Allen.
The Impossible Burger. Then he wants a real burger. Why not?
I mean, I want a pack of cigarettes and like a pound of cocaine, but I stopped doing that. Because it's going to fucking kill me.
To Keith's point, that's why when you said I don't eat meat that much, it breaks my heart. I do want us to have love and compassion for each other. You know the assholes that stop smoking and they start immediately telling people, you know that's killing you? We need to remember when
that's
I'm talking to you and when I'm talking to you, I'm talking to myself.
Right.
I ate meat the majority of my life. But we
you
can't
sound
become
like
these
Yosemite
preachy
Sam
assholes.
On the island trying to convince himself that coconut's the best thing ever.
I like that reference. I'm going to have to go in
you remember
time
that episode?
To get it. But.
Well, Yosemite Sammy's like, ooh, coconut cream pie and roasted coconut. And he's like, I hate coconut.
But
he's trying to convince himself
isn't
that coconut
that
is great.
To know that you get an Impossible Burger. If I eat an Impossible Burger with no meat, I'm going to want meat sooner or later. I want a real burger on.
You say Impossible Burger is a gateway
yes.
burger.
Yes.
I understand that. I think you guys are fine as you are. I don't want to change you. And, you know, maybe give it a try. See how you feel.
Well,
when you're ready, if you want.
Well, Pete certainly has an evangelical zeal.
I do like
with regards
I have
to
that problem.
Health.
He
and,
I have
and
that problem.
He's very judgmental on it.
Oh, my God.
I don't think he's judgmental, but he's
I'll buy you a plate of wings right now just to prove.
He's not judgmental. He is evangelical. It does remind me a little bit of a multi-level marketing
the full of shit
pitch.
Yeah, you're right. I could sell a timeshare. We need to remember that we're full of shit. Vegans are full of shit. You know what I mean? We need to remember that we're all full of shit. And that's what's missing from the vegan dialogue. It's some humility and some I don't know.
I just got a signal from one of your team.
Yeah.
That
well,
we need
I have
to,
a thing.
We need to wrap things up. So.
And some bacon for you boys. So we'll wrap it in bacon. A fig for us, and we'll wrap it in bacon for you guys.
Thank you, Pete.
I think she's coming back to me. Something about her
Perry?
Lets me know
Perry?
She can be convinced. I'm looking at her.
And cigarettes.
Yeah.
Once a smoker, always a smoker. I will say, I think the last time I ate meat was in New York City, and it was alone in my hotel, and I was like, fuck it, I want some chicken wings.
I agree that I feel like I like being a vegetarian, but I like not being puritanical about it.
That's what I'm trying. That's
like
exactly
when I
my
was
point,
in Italy a few years ago. I ate a piece of meat from the farm next to wherever the fuck I was staying. And I was like, that's fine.
And I think what we're doing, if we do it consciously and deliberately and with love and with compassion for ourselves and for our predicament being in this world, that's a beautiful thing. You can almost do anything with compassion and awareness and have it be okay. That's kind of a weird thing to say, but it's true. I also just want to plug my book, Comedy Sex God, which we talked a little
Comedy
bit about.
Comedy Sex God, we talked about it. Yeah. It's basically what happens. It's called. It could be called After Crashing.
The fourth season of Crashing.
But it's not. It's called Comedy Sex God.
With a spiritual bent, but it's not as preachy as I've been on this podcast.
Well, we invite
only
you.
Towards the end.
Only towards the end. Right when I've got you, and you have to finish it. You're like, this asshole, but I got
to
finish
we
it.
We invited you here to be you. Had you come here without an evangelical
bent
zeal, I would have tossed you right out.
Thank you very much.
And Dan, I don't want
I was
anything
when
other
I called
than the
you
real
an idiot. You're a sweet man and a funny man.
Okay, but now you're getting obsessive compulsive with your apologies.
That's true, and it's more about me than it is you, isn't
about,
it?
About, yeah.
I want to sound nice more
Keith,
than receive
Keith,
the
thank you for coming down early. We're taping early today because Pete was only able to come here at 4. Are you on the shows tonight, Pete?
Hey, man, I just want to go out and buy the Comedy Sex Guide.
Thank you.
That's all I want to do now.
It's about you.
And you,
and
can
you know you're raw dogging it. Chapter one, raw dog.
And you can still listen to Keith. If you haven't heard enough of Keith, then you can never get enough. He co-hosts Three Girls, One Keith with his dear friend, Amy Schumer.
Rachel Feinstein.
And Rachel Feinstein and Bridget Everett.
Yeah. Oh, those are three
and have
good.
You,
those are three
have
great
you met,
women. You can't cut one
have
of them
Have you met the baby,
title.
By the way? Gat was his name? Gina Tell?
Gina Tell.
Gina Tell Fisher.
A lovely baby.
Well,
good
so
baby.
Our congratulations to Amy once again on the birth of her child.
Yep.
Perry L, whatever. No, you're part of the show, so I don't need to thank you.
My baby's middle name is Lang.
And you have a baby, too.
Just kidding.
That was good.
You,
for
you.
Everybody who caught that,
that was
very
okay.
good.
Pete brought the jokes.
All right, next time, I think our next episode, is that with Adam Carolla?
Adam Carolla,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
We're really on a Carolla.
Oh, bring up all the things you brought up with me with him, and you'll get some dirt.
All righty. We'll noted.
He won't play it safe.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.